Live from the WLIWFM studio in Southampton, New York, on July 17th, 2023, I'm Gianna Volpe. Bankruptcy proceedings by the Catholic Church on Long Island linked to clergy sexual abuse cases have gone on for nearly 3 years and piled up $70 million in legal fees. Now a federal judge says he may intervene to bring the process to an end and effectively give clergy abuse survivors their day in court. Bart Jones reporting on Newsday.com that U.S. bankruptcy judge Martin Glenn said during a court hearing in Manhattan last week that he may take the highly unusual step of ending the bankruptcy proceedings because the survivors and the Diocese of Rockville Center can't reach an agreement. That would send some 600 cases back to state court for civil trials. Lawyers for survivors called it a major step forward in their fight over hundreds of cases of abuse, some of them dating back decades in the nation's eighth largest Roman Catholic diocese. The church said it still hopes to reach an agreement and avoid potentially even more costly civil trials that could hobble its ability to carry out its mission. Judge Glenn said he was not eager to set a precedent by becoming the first judge in the nation to kick a Catholic diocese out of bankruptcy, but he suggested he was prepared to do so. Quote, "The survivors deserve an opportunity to be heard by a jury of their peers," Glenn said. "They've been held off too long." He indicated his decision will come no later than October. In other news, the 2023 Suffolk County Public Library's summer tour is underway. The program invites residents and visitors of all ages to embark on a journey of discovery and exploration through the public libraries and towns in Suffolk County. Quote, "With the summer reading theme being all together now, we thought there was no better time for the libraries of Suffolk County to come together for the tour." That's Derek Ivey, the Youth Services Coordinator of the Suffolk Cooperative Library System. As reported on 27east.com, through August 31st, any Suffolk resident can pick up their Suffolk Summer Library Tour booklet from their local public library within Suffolk County. The booklet has a list of all the participating libraries with a fun fact included about each one. As patrons make their way to each library, they simply present their booklet at the designated summer stamp station, and a library staff member will stamp it for them. When patrons hit 5, 15, and 25 stamps in their booklets, they can be entered into raffles. The prizes include Barnes & Noble gift cards and a Nook tablet. For more information, library, LIVEBRARY.com/summer tour. In Riverhead, fines for certain town code violations could come with an additional surcharge to fund recreational and human services programs, remedy blight, and beautify the town and protect water quality. Under a new law being considered by the town board, Alec Lewis reporting on RiverheadLocal.com that people found guilty in Riverhead Town Justice Court of certain violations would pay a mandatory surcharge of between $65 and $250 depending on the violation, according to a draft of the new law discussed during Thursday's town board work session. The surcharges would go to special funds and appropriated as needed by the board in the annual budget. Quote, "The goal is to basically link up the violations to a corresponding remedial and restorative fund." That quote from Deputy Town Attorney Danielle Hurley, who said the hope is the fines also reduce recidivism. Eric Howard, Riverhead Town Attorney, said the surcharge would be mandatory and would not be waived by the attorney prosecuting the violation as part of a plea deal. Quote, "Our approach in this would be that certain terms not be waivable or negotiable at all." The amendment was modeled after a similar section of the Southampton Town Code, Howard said, adding, "It's just a nice way." Oh, nope, this quote is from Councilmember Tim Hubbard, who said, "It's just a nice way to garner a little money for special projects and other projects that were always scrambling and looking for funds." Howard said the funds could be appropriated to help the town fulfill matching requirements for certain grant funding it has received. town board is expected to vote tomorrow to schedule a public hearing on proposed new surcharges for code violations. And finally, front page news this morning. Residents of the Gilgo Beach area expressed relief yesterday that an arrest was made in several of the unsolved killings that to many have become synonymous with their picturesque oceanfront community. Meanwhile, residents in Massapequa Park watched Sunday as police continued to pull evidence from the home of Rex A. Horman, the architect charged with murder in the killings of three women found in the marshes and bramble near Gilgo. He is also the prime suspect in a fourth killing. Colin Armada, a lifeguard at Gilgo Beach, said he grew up in West Gilgo, spending time wandering the trails that weave through the area. Quote, little did you know that there might be a body there, Armada 30 said, who admitted he was a nervous wreck when he first heard about the killings. Any relief that came with Herman's arrest was tempered by the fact that he hasn't been connected with all victims whose remains were found buried in the wooded area. Ed Finnegan, 65, of West Gilgo, said the arrest was long overdue. He remembered thinking when the case first broke, quote, holy smokes, what's going on? We live in this quiet little community, and now all these bodies are being found. Herman, 59, pleaded not guilty on Friday in the killings of Melissa Barthelemy, Megan Waterman, and Amber Costello. Authorities described him as a strong suspect in the killing of Maureen Brainerd Barnes. Joe Chambers, 38, who grew up in West Babylon and sports an Ocean Parkway tattoo on his chest, stopped by for a swim near Gilgo Beach on Sunday. Quote, this is our family beach spot, said Chambers, who now lives in Nebraska. When the news first broke, Chambers said it was pretty scary and disturbing because, I mean, it's like right there. It's our whole world. He was happy to hear about the arrest and was struck by the fact that court papers said Horman's DNA was pulled from a leftover pizza crust. Quote, that's the most Long Island thing that I have ever heard in my whole life. End quote. Speaking of front page news, we'll kick it off this morning with Little Feet's front page news before we turn the page with Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band. Then give you a chance to color in your own white blank page with Mumford & Sons, with music from all decades and genres, leading up to our Medical Monday segment with Dr. Silvana Obici at the bottom of the hour, reading the weather in Stony Brook in honor of her. Looking like widespread haze after 2 p.m. today, patchy fog before 10 a.m., otherwise mostly sunny with a high near 89 degrees, northwest wind around 6 miles per hour, becoming west in the afternoon. Tonight, widespread haze continuing partly cloudy otherwise, with low around 73 degrees, south wind around 8 miles per hour. Right now it's 76 degrees. Make sure you keep an eye on the air quality, airnow.gov, if you're looking for wherever you are. I just checked in Southampton. Looking good right now, but we will keep an eye on that for you. I wanted to say quickly that I mentioned last week when we were talking about the fireworks on Shelter Island, I was talking about, we were mentioning Brett, a Brett that was connected with the fireworks. And I was saying, you know, I'm vaguely remembering Brett, and a connection to the Hamptons Collegiate Baseball League. It popped into my head as I was driving around this weekend. I believe his name is Brett Mauser, and I believe I interviewed him in connection with the league on Shelter Island when working at the Reporter as a Cub back in, it must have been, 2011. It's now 2023. I'm Gianna Volpe, and you're listening to Long Island's only local NPR radio station, WLIWFM. The weekday morning and midnight show, The Heart, recorded live from the heart of the East End, the WLIWFM studio in Southampton, New York. I'm Gianna Volpe. This is Little Feet, and you, whoever you are out there, you're awesome, and you're listening to Long Island's only NPR radio station, News you can trust, music you love on WLI WFM. Little Feat leading us into our Medical Monday segment underwritten by Jennifer Benton. Very excited to welcome on to the show, returning Dr. Silvana Obici, Chief of Endocrinology and Metabolism Division at Stony Brook Medicine, talking about a new study, troubling new research, finding that rates of type 1 and type 2 diabetes are continuing to increase in children and young adults throughout the country. Good morning, Doctor. Thank you for being with us again.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Do you mind if we start by talking about this study? Where is it coming from?
Yes, so this study actually was it's a study that was published in the Lancet Diabetes and Endocrinology Journal and in 2023. And it reports the results of the diabetes registry called SEARCH. This SEARCH is a nationwide initiative that collects data about diagnosis for diabetes. So it's a pretty extensive study that collected all of the diagnoses, new diagnoses of diabetes in the USA between 2002 and 2018.
Right.
So it screened hundreds of thousands of people.
Right. It looks like that they found the incidence of type 1 diabetes increasing 2% per year in those 17 years. And the incidence of type 2 diabetes increasing by 5.3% per year. Can you talk about what this means for the young people in our nation?
Well, obviously, being diagnosed with diabetes at young age, it exposes young people to possible and severe complications of diabetes, including eye disease, kidney disease, including neuropathy, and therefore the health risk for this young individuals is much higher than their own peers, and as the burden of diabetes starts at a very young age, they will be exposed for a longer time to the consequences of diabetes. And not to speak of the fact that they will need to be placed on medications and they will be involved in continuous health care and the side effects of the medications and so on. And so it's a huge, not only health burden for the kids, the families, and the healthcare system, but it also has a huge human impact of the lives of the young people.
Right. So when we look at the bulk of the last two decades and we see how culture or products or whatnot have been changing. What is it looking like that is contributing to this increase, at least in part?
Yes. Yeah. Obviously, we can make some associations, although it's at times this type of associations, they need to be confirmed as the causes, right, for the increased incidence. But overall, for example, for the type 2 diabetes diagnosis, there is a clear association, and I would say it is established that obesity is a major determinant and cause of type 2 diabetes. You know, I must say in the past 50 to 70 years, type 2 diabetes is increasingly a pediatric diagnosis, which was almost absent from the diseases of young people. But right. with the emergence of obesity also in the youth, the prevalence of diabetes has increased enormously. And now pediatricians are, you know, need to be trained in the management of type 2, also in the young people. The correlation between the type 2 and obesity is complex because obviously weight gain and increased fat mass is very important. On the other end, nutrition, in other words, excess calories, the calories that are mostly coming from processed food, and the lack of exercise, the lack of physical activity are the major causes of this epidemic of obesity in youth.
Right. I mean, you think go ahead, doctor.
Yeah. No, I wanted to add that as far as type 1 is concerned, obesity per se is not associated with type 1. Type 1 is a disease that largely is caused by autoimmune disorder that destroys our insulin cells. And therefore, people with type 1 diabetes have no insulin, and therefore insulin has to be replaced by medication. And this autoimmune destruction of the insulin cells appears to be associated to a predisposition to autoimmune disorders. However, this particular study points out that perhaps there are environmental causes other than obesity. And there are obviously hypotheses that have been put forward, and however, there is much more to learn about.
Yes.
Why.
Yeah. So I'm curious. What are the theories here as far as causation is concerning? Like, what kind of environmental factors could be contributing to a rise 2% a year over the past 17 years in type 1 diabetes in young adults here in the country?
Yeah. Okay, so, well, first of all, as I say, the type 1 diabetes is not recognized as a transmitted genetically from, familial predisposition. On the other end, there is a certain amount of genetic predisposition. In other words, not everybody who is exposed to the causes of type 1 will get the disease. But secondly, there are two major hypotheses that have been proposed for the onset of type 1 in juveniles. One of them is so-called the virus hypothesis. That, in other words, there is a susceptibility to a virus infection that will trigger an autoimmune response, and this autoimmune response will attack the insulin specifically. Virus is not identified.
I just want to make sure I'm understanding. So is this one specific virus?
Not exactly.
Okay. Are you saying that people could get a viral infection, and some people having this virus infection causes these other things? Can you explain a little more?
Exactly.
Okay.
In other words, it's a as the viral infection, and there is earlier evidence that suggests that a lot of type 1, the onset of type 1 diabetes is preceded by a viral illness.
Wow.
And whether this viral illness will cause the disease will is determined only by the type of virus, which can be of different origins,
yeah.
But also from
susceptibility. I imagine you're still really kind of looking into how it works, but you're saying that there is a large incidence of, as far as type 1 diabetes, the onset of it. Many of these cases are preceded by a viral infection of some sort.
Exactly.
Interesting.
There is also. So now, from the environmentally speaking, this is the most common hypothesis. But there is another very attracting hypothesis that, as I said, it still requires a lot of studies to really make the causal connection, but it is an hypothesis in which the changes in gut microbiome, which is actually possibly affected by our nutrition, can trigger autoimmune diseases, and therefore more susceptibility to type 1 diabetes.
And by microbiome, but what is a microbiome? That's not just like the internal environment, like flora and fauna inside your body. What is, or is it? What does that mean?
Yeah. So it is actually well known that the bacteria that live in our gut, they live in a symbiotic relationship with our gut and ourselves,
right.
and actually they are very important for many physiological processes. They help with digestion. They produce essential vitamins, and they are also producing mediators of immunity. So, in other words, they protect us against against infections.
I feel so smart. I actually nailed it when you said microbiome. I'm like, I wonder if that's what she's talking about.
Yes.
So that's why if you take like antibiotics. Right? Are you going to want to, let's say, eat yogurt or something so you can replenish the good kind of bacteria in your gut?
Yes, that's a very, very interesting question, because it is true that there are conditions that are associated with the decreased immune defense due to the use of antibiotics. Mm. It is actually well known that children who had severe infections, or they had to be treated for life-threatening infections, and for they received antibiotics in older age, they might be exposed to other disorder due to the lack of a healthy microbiome. So how can we reconstitute or do something about keeping the microbiome healthy? Well, as you mentioned, there are probiotics, prebiotics that you can use. On the other hand, I want to stress the importance of healthy nutrition, because the best way to keep your microbiome healthy is to eat healthy foods. In other words, avoid the processed foods, avoid the foods that have too much refined nutrients, and I'm not talking about only sugar, any kind of refined nutrients can be a problem because refined and foods that are have been processed too much, they don't contain anymore the healthy combination of fibers, antioxidants, and vitamins that are essential not only for our body but also for the microbiome to survive and be healthy.
I'm so fascinated by all of this, and you know, when you're talking about all of the research involved, I'm curious about the studies that I have to imagine are going on in the wake and through the pandemic, as far as the connection between viral infections preceding the onset of type 1 diabetes. I imagine they're probably looking at a larger increase, perhaps, through the past few years. Do you want to touch on other risk factors as far as the rise of diabetes in children, Dr. Obici?
Excuse me, can you repeat the question?
Other risk factors. We didn't touch on, for example, who the highest percentage increases, who that has meant or who that has been with, with children and teens.
Yeah. So, I believe that what was interesting about this study, there was a seasonal change in diagnosis. In other words, increasing type 2 diagnosis were mostly in the winter.
Right, I saw that. It said type 1 usually in the winter, and then type 2 in August. I thought that was really interesting,
yes,
too. Can you talk a little bit about why that might be?
Yes. I stand corrected. You're right. So, winter time. So, obviously, we can speculate that a lot of viral illnesses occur in the winter time more often.
Right.
Upper respiratory infections. people are cooped up at home, and they are more exposed to respiratory viruses. And so, again, it's mostly an environmental reason of exposure. The summer diagnosis of type 2 might be more associated with the fact that a lot of young people, in school age, they are screened at the beginning of the athletic season, which happens in the summer, July, August, and therefore they are diagnosed in the summer because they are screened in the summer. So obviously, as I said, this may be speculations, but it is a fact that there is an interesting seasonal difference.
So, Dr. Obici, I just have one more question, which is if people are looking to decrease the risk for diabetes, particularly kids and teens, what can they do other than visiting stonybrookmedicine.edu if they're looking for more information?
Yes, thank you very much. Yes, I would really suggest that parents and young people are more aware of preventative medicine, and therefore, rather than waiting until they get sick, they would get an annual physical at least. Number two, as I might have said before, with my repetitive role of healthy lifestyle, we know, and it is a fact actually, that type 2 diabetes can be prevented with healthy lifestyle and prevention of weight gain. And so I hope that this will be implemented not only at the individual level, but I really hope that we as a society pay more attention to prevention of these disorders in younger age and institute programs that help the young people to navigate what it means a healthy nutrition, how to avoid consumption of, excess consumption of sugary soda. I must say, excess consumption of diet beverages, because there is some evidence that even diet beverages might be causing damage to our microbiome. So healthy nutrition, eat more non-processed food, decrease the calories and increase your physical activity are the major way to prevent diabetes. But also, once you have it, newly diagnosed people with diabetes, if they go on a weight loss program and they lose, let's say, 15% of their body weight, have 80% chance of putting the type 2 diabetes in remission.
Nice.
So this is a very hopeful message, yeah. But, you know, it has to be approached at the individual level, but also, you know, the society has to help to create the environment that's conducive to keep the lifestyle going. For example, physical activity should be promoted and implemented in the schools. Nutrition must be taken into account when preparing meals, and and this should be discussed with families and young patients.
Amen. It's great advice for children of all ages from Dr. Silvana Obici, Chief of Endocrinology and Metabolism Division at Stony Brook Medicine, stonybrookmedicine.edu. For more information, I'm Gianna Volpe. This was the Medical Monday segment underwritten by Jennifer Benton. Turning the page with Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band. You, whoever you are out there, you're awesome. And you're listening to Long Island's only local NPR radio station, WLIWFM. News you can trust. Music you love.
On a long and lonesome highway east of Omaha, you can listen to the engine moaning out his one note song. You can think about the woman or the girl you knew the night before. But your thoughts will soon be wandering the way they always do when you're riding 16 hours and there's nothing much to do. And you don't feel much like riding, you just wish the trip was through. See, here I am on the road again. There I am up on the stage. Here I go playing star again. There I go, turn the page. pleasure. Well, you walk into a restaurant strung out from the road, and you feel the eyes upon you as you're shaking off the cold. You pretend it doesn't bother you, but you just want to explode. Most times you can't hear them talk, other times you can. All the same old cliches. Is that a woman or a man? And you always seem outnumbered. You don't dare make a stand. Here I am on the road again. There I am up on the stage. Here I go playing star again. There I go, turn the page. Out there in the spotlight, you're a million miles away. Every ounce of energy you try to give away. As the sweat pours out your body like the music that you play. Later in the evening, as you lie awake in bed, with the echoes from the amplifiers ringing in your head, you smoke the day's last cigarette, remembering what she said. Here I am on the road again. There I am up on the stage. Here I go playing star again. There I go. Turn the page.
Listening to WLIWFM, Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band, leading you into Mumford and Sons, Paige France and Beautified Junkyards, leading you into NPR Newsbreak.
Can you lie next to her and give her your heart as well as your body? And can you lie next to her and confess your love as well as your folly? And can you kneel before the king and say, I'm clean? I'm clean. But tell me now, where was my fault in loving you with my whole heart? Oh, tell me now, where was my fault in loving you with my whole heart? Thank you.
But denied my affections, my affections. So tell me now, where was my fault in loving you with my whole heart? Oh, tell me now, where was my fault in loving you?
Music from all decades and genres, interviews with folks from all walks of life, all morning and midnight long on Long Island's only NPR radio station, WLIWFM.
You, me, and all the kings and queens buried in the junkyard.
This is The Heart.
Every time the herald cherubs sing, we rattle with the card parts. But my work is through.
All right, time to switch themes, moving from Junkyard, from Paige France's Hello Dear Wind record, to the Beautified Junkyard's Radioactivity track from their self-titled record. All the rest of the songs will be about radioactivity as we prepare to speak to director Heidi Huttner, also an SBU professor, talking about her film Radioactive, The Women of 3 Mile Island. The bottom of the next hour, Monday Meditation on WLIWFM.